This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and enter the code FILMSACK. You get that? $50 off any purchase. casper.com/filmsack and enter the code FILMSACK.
Dundee. Tell me about him.
Well, there are Bushmen, and there's Mick Dundee. See, he's more like an Aborigine than a white man. He was adopted by Aborigines, and he had to go through that initiation. He knows about their magic, their black.
Ho, ho, magic.
There's nothing wrong with the food, it's the company. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 242. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined tonight by Brian. That music is just looping forever, Dunaway.
It was. Hey, what's that, Mick? Do we have peanut butter? I don't know. Why don't you look in the cabinets? It's not like we have cabinet doors in our progressive late 80s neon-filled home. And you want to see the bathroom have tampons just sitting there in plain view? Yep, tampons. Not some kind of crocodile bait or whatever you leather tan rapscallion will do next. Thanks, Mick.
Nice. Also with us, Randy, that's not a bad movie. This is a bad movie, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. Brian, this week I only have one word for you. Croiky. Let me explain. Croiky is just another way of saying Christ. It's a holdover from a weirder time when saying Christ aloud in mixed company was considered blasphemous. And blasphemy used to be a thing. So people in places like Australia and Utah invented slightly different sounding words.
Wait.
And they got away with it because those fool God. See, God doesn't know you're cursing when you say cripes, for example. And if you say cripes in Australia, guess what? You're getting pancakes. Sorry. Pancoikes. Jesus Christ, this movie sucks.
Pancoikes. They'll sound good right now. Also with us, Brian. Two freaking hours, Ibbit.
Where's my order of cripes? Sue, it's tough being away from the outback. There's so many things I miss. I think most of all, I miss the bush. Back in the 70s, the bush was all around. You couldn't go 10 feet without tripping over the bush. These days, I don't know why, but you just can't find much bush. Maybe it's global warming.
I almost went for the mini bush jokes myself.
Once again, you've trampled all over my Twitter post. I'm not changing it this week.
Scott did mine, so I'm. You know, it's all turnabout is fair play.
Yeah, it's all right, fine. Good. Something like
I'm
that.
Not
is that how it works? Sure.
Something like
we
that.
We will return to that joke for my Twitter.
Maybe
post.
The dingo ate your baby.
Hey, there was a dingo in. Did you see the, yes. the in the credits, opening credits? There was a guy named Dingo. Maybe he was the guy that ate the baby.
Really? A guy named Dingo?
Yeah, a guy named Dingo.
I missed that entirely. Was that one of his bar buddies from the outback?
No, he was like, I guess he must have, I don't know what he was, but it was in the opening credits, so he must be something to do with something. You got to be pretty important to be in the opening credits nowadays.
That's
still better than the role that poor Stephen Root was credited with in this film.
Yeah.
Wow. DEA agent Toilet.
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 Is that what it says?
Yes.
Agent Amazing.
Toilet. DEA agent
Toilet. Oh my gosh, I love Stephen Root. Like, I'm a huge fan, and he can have my red stapler anytime. He's great. We love that guy. But, yeah, not his not his best moment. Whatever. There are a few people
his
like
first moment, though.
Charles Dutton, Who was somebody else I noticed that I was surprised was in this? Oh, I noticed a name in here that reminded me of you, Ibbot. This Betty Bobbitt is the closest name to Ibbot in here.
What? That was Betty Bobbitt.
Betty Bobbitt and Brian Ibbot.
She played Meg the Tourist.
Yep.
It was actually a few people that I enjoyed. Charles S. Dunton as Bad Bad Leroy Brown.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you totally know... I mean, we've seen... oh, my God, pulling up his name here because I can't find it. Jose...
Luis Guzman.
No, no.
Well, Luis Guzman was in there, yeah.
Yeah, he played Jose.
Quit saying it like that, by the way. That's a really... Luis Guzman. It's killing me. No, Luis Guzman is in it, but he didn't say shit. Oh, yeah, that's the guy.
Juan Fernandez, the dude we have seen play, seems like the exact same role in, it feels like, a billion other movies.
Yep, he's always in this, like, incredibly crazy clothes. Mm-hmm. That crazy curly hair ponytail thing he's got on. Like that guy, he is a kind of everywhere.
Was that the ponytail or the rat tail? Because it was a rat.
For a lot of the time, it was just hanging down unrestrained.
Yeah. He's the second in command, his right hand man, the bad guy's right hand man, right? Am I thinking of the right guy?
Yep, his brother.
Oh,
is it his brother? I thought he was one of his lead henchmen.
Hey, guess what?
He's also his brother.
Yeah, but guess what? I about slept through 90% of this piece of shit.
But hold on. Wait, like, I just want to clarify for anybody listening. With the Juan Fernandez character, he's the one with the mullet. Just so you know.
Which
one? There's so many mullets.
No. There's only one mullet in this movie. I mean, there's only one that truly matters.
Which one?
This is true. There was a wide variety of bad guy different wear, such as rat tail, mullet. There was ponytail, but most of it was slick back.
There was a mohawk.
Yeah,
it was mohawk. There was a big fluffy blue mohawk.
Slick back was the way of the day, though, right? For bad guys,
oh, totally.
That seems during like the 80s. Yeah, yes, during the 80s, your hair could be long, but you would still slick it way back. Usually a tight ponytail, like the purple suit guy in the
purple
subway.
Purple suit guy.
And this is how people have such rosy memories of this movie. I was on Twitter talking to some guy about it last night, and he says, I said, oh, this thing's a pile of hot trash or something. And he wrote back and said, oh, yeah, but those final scenes in the subway were great. Mm-hmm. And I went,
the subway?
I'm like, dude, they were in the freaking outback in the final scenes. There was no subway at the end.
The love scene at the very end when they get together in the first one. I think a lot of people get this one confused with the first one.
Probably. I mean, what's the damn difference?
It all feels like the same movie, right? I mean, it's fish out of water. Great. Let's
croc out of water.
So this movie has a bad case of sequelitis. And we recently talked about Karate Kid 2 having it bad. Like, Karate Kid 2 is the worst remake sequel I've ever seen.
What?
Really?
But
come on.
I'd give it to this one over that one.
No, I'm talking about specifically sequelitis, where you just remake the first movie. Karate Kid 2 was a straight remake of the first movie.
Yeah, that's true. They changed locations, but that's basically the same movie.
This one has it, but this one tries, it's constantly trying to break out of it. Like, what did we do in the first movie that worked? We're going to do that for a few minutes, then we're going to go do this other thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
They actually flipped it, because in the first one, they were Australia for the most part with a little bit of New York. And this one was a lot of New York with a little bit of Australia.
I felt like a lot of Australia by the time I was done with it. There is so much sitting around doing nothing in that last half. Like, lots of no music,
enjoying the outback.
Great. That's great. Everyone should do that. But in a movie, you got to keep me some damn pacing, man. These guys are sitting around on logs talking about nothing. Just nothing. Just sitting there.
Yeah, which brings up my first trope.
Oh, great. Oh, wait. You know what we should do?
We haven't even gotten a Fletcher.
Yeah, let's do the Fletcher, then the trope. Here you go.
Crocodile Dundee 2. Outback legend Mick Crocodile Dundee, played by Paul Hogan, reunites with his lady friend, American reporter Sue Charlton, played by Linda Kozlowski, for another wild adventure. This time, Sue is kidnapped by international drug kingpin Louis Rico, played by Hetcher Ubery, in Australia's bush country. The unflappable Mick must summon all of his Outback survival skills to rescue her. Hogan writes the script. John Cornell directs.
That's the most upbeat Fletcher he's ever been.
It is. He sounds like he feels really good.
He didn't watch the movie.
That's called polishing a turd right there.
Yeah. He watches the movie, and then we get a sort of beaten down Fletcher.
Yeah. So you were going to... Oh, where'd my trope file go? That's not good. Here you go. Randy, you were going to do this.
You used them all up.
There you go.
Right. So we talk a lot about that trope of, well, if you just called the police, you'd be fine. Yeah. Like, this is so weird that nobody's calling the police. Mm-hmm. But in the outback, you got to expect the police are quite a ways away, right?
Right.
Like, if you go get the police, it's going to take you a long time to get them back out here, right?
Sure.
Right. Well, 911.
If you're just sitting around,
yeah.
Like if all you're doing is camping, you may as well go get the police.
Yeah. That's all they did. They just sat around, and when they would say things, they'd say things like, oh, well, I own this land, and you have a little romantic moment, and then it was a bunch of long staring at a bunch of bad guys who looked, you know, now it's their turn to be fish out of water and be wearing all the wrong clothes for their freaking outback camp job.
Next, you're going to tell me that you didn't like The Journey Through Middle Earth. I mean, come on.
I love that because they paced that properly. That was like...
they paced that properly.
You know what I mean? Like, there's chunks of... Okay,
6 hours later.
Right, but it's interspersed with a bunch of beats. This had no beats. Like, the only beats in it were early on Charles S. Dutton and the theme gang of white guys doing their crap. That at least had some pacing to it. Then they go to Australia and it gets dumb. Oh, here's my other problem. Here's my impression of Paul Hogan through the whole thing. Here's everybody else in comparison to him. Oh, man, what are we going to do? Oh, shit, look at the thing. And here's him. Well, I don't know. Like, he's just not even in it. Yeah. I didn't feel like he's barely in this movie.
Looks like it's got my leg. It's actually cut my leg off. Yeah, that's painful.
Exactly.
Well,
I might.
Oh, my wife's dead. Oh, well.
When the main character is the only one who's totally stoned the whole movie, and he's also the person who wrote it, you have to wonder.
Yeah.
Like, this is his joke, right? This is what he truly believes the movie is about. It's about this stoned Australian guy surrounded by mayhem.
Yeah. Or just super chill, aloof guy. I don't remember that feeling in the first one. The first one had kind of a, and I don't love the first one either. Let me make that clear here. But I think it's better than this. And the first one at least had this feeling of like innocence, and he had some excitement to him. This was just like, he looked bored the entire, more bored than I was, and that's saying something.
Interesting. I took it more like he was. Mr. Miyagi in this one, because he was reserved because he has mastered.
Yeah, but who is he training? That's a terrible comparison.
He's not training anyone.
He's
mastered. He is the master.
In the first one, the big trope is fish out of water, and in the second one, it's like fish back in water. Okay, who's got to carry all the humor? Well, other people, and there are other people that couldn't. They didn't have the strength to carry it.
Yeah, well, it's also just badly written. Like, there's still those moments of like where Paul Hogan doesn't understand who Richard Nixon is. Give me a freaking break. And that fell completely flat. But you know,
there's so many things in here where it's like, oh, is Australia in space? Because you know, you can live on Earth and completely be unaware of 90% of what's going on in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
Which is a perfectly fine joke if you have the right person as the foil.
Yeah, right.
He doesn't make a good foil for those pop culture jokes because it's very well established he's outside of it.
Yeah.
Look at what he's wearing.
Yeah.
We can all see that he doesn't know anything about the real world.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that Leroy Brown was not enough humor for you, or Bill Dobrieve as DEA agent Toilet.
DEA agent toilet. That is the only scene I laughed at because I felt like his delivery on trying to not get his wiener cut and stuff kind of made me. It was
good up until he looks down and says, "You okay, buddy?"
You're there, little buddy. Yeah, it was okay. He was all right, but nothing else made me laugh. And everything that was supposed to be kind of Rambo serious, like you're in my country now, that whole thing. That just left me flatter than
Rambo
my sister's
serious.
Boobs at 12.
I'm gonna put that one down for things that Scott said.
Well, it's even said in the trivia claims anyway that he was heavily influenced in writing it by the Rambo films. He says he wanted all these hunting skills and all this crap to come out the way it does for John Rambo when he's, you know, out in the forest, or not the forest, out in the jungle trying to kill Charlies or whatever. Actually, I don't know how that goes.
In the first movie, he's in the woods in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's just
under siege.
Right.
Yeah.
He's being tried. They try to chase him out of town, and he ends up having a bad attitude, and people die. It's not good.
Yeah. Didn't go well. For some reason, do you guys hear that in my ears? Hold on. There's something up. There we go.
That buzzing.
I'm fixed now. Everything's fine now. It's poo. It's poo. Can we just early agreement that it's poo now?
Okay. I'm going to agree that the movie is slow. So I'm going to give you that. And I'm going to agree that it could have been better. But I am going to say that it is like a comfort food and is comforting.
Hold on. It's, comfort food is that's food you want to eat again.
I don't want necessarily, necessarily.
It's food that, you know, just makes you feel like, oh, okay, it's a safe place you can always go back to.
Yes.
Mashed potatoes are comfort food. You want to eat them, but it's kind of like, oh, I'm a little bit full.
But look, you'll 3 weeks from now, you'll say, yeah, I could go for some more mashed potatoes. 3 weeks from now, I'm going to go, I never want to see Crocodile Dundee 2 again.
I didn't say it was your comfort food.
Well, that's true. That's true. Did you like the original when you saw it originally? I assume you did. I never saw it in theaters.
This is what Crocodile Dundee did for me. It brought a world that I had no knowledge of, which was Australia, and it brought it to America, and that really sticks with me. About everything I know or learned originally, the base is right here at Crocodile Dundee.
Really?
However sad that is.
That is sad.
However sad it is, it is the truth that he exposed me to a different culture.
How is the educational system in South Carolina today, though? How is it today?
Terrific. Okay. You would be surprised. Our educational system is pretty good.
Look, no, I mean, there was kind of a these movies brought to the public consciousness some of these, at least the tropes of Australia. Like, I'd never heard Shrimp on the Barbie or
right,
you know, any of the Foster's beer ads. None of that stuff existed prior to this. But I never once, even then, watched it and went, wow, what a foreign, exotic land this must be. It was never that for me, you know?
Right. Well, I never went, oh, wow, I wish I could really go to the Outback and hang out with Crocodile Dundee. No, I didn't have that. But it does. It's a nice, comfortable place for me to visit.
Yeah.
I think so.
Someone
breathed
in.
I think some of the scenes are beautiful, too. Some of the scenes from the Outback.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Yeah, right. I mean, but it's just not as desolate as they would have you believe.
Oh,
and not.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The Outback part
there's
is.
Some
well,
of it,
the Outback.
Some
outback,
of it is, yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
Right.
So
but,
I got a couple of tropes that I think characterize the film itself.
Here you go.
Okay. I love the suicide vignette. I think it's I think it's so fun. They didn't put it out right. They started a little fire with this vignette and they managed to not put it out. It ends with him tapping on some glass. There's no payoff.
Right.
But the suicide vignette was, it reminded me of a lot of films that have done this sort of gallows humor, like Better Off Dead. Mm-hmm. Remember, there's a, what's his name?
John Cusack is trying to kill himself throughout
the whole
movie.
He's trying to kill himself.
Yeah.
There's other movies, if you think about it, that where, you know, there's the recent Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has a suicide joke.
Oh, right. Totally. Yeah. Arthur Dent is constantly on the hunt for a way to check out.
Right.
And if you look at that, you go, whoa, wait a minute. This movie, this is a vignette in the middle of a movie. It doesn't need to be here. It could be taken out. You could excise this scene and it would do nothing to change the film. But then you start looking around. Whoa, there's a lot of these in this movie. This is like a Saturday Night Live film. When you come back, if Crocodile Dundee had been a Saturday Night Live character and then they came along and said, we're making a movie about this character. This is what you would get.
Yeah.
This is what you would expect.
Yeah, not funny at all, but yeah.
Right, so it's like a series of these little short skits, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crocodile Dundee goes to laundromat. Oh, look at this. You got clouds floating, running around in circles.
It's the same joke over and over again, right? The knife, because even Scott referred to the knife like several times. They never say, that's not a knife in this one. That's the first one exclusively.
But they make that joke.
They do make that joke, yeah, because he says, that's a knife.
Like,
Leroy Brown says it, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He does. No, but they make that joke in so many different ways in this film that it gets tiresome. Up to and including the final scene in the movie where the joke becomes, well, that's not Mick. That's Mick over there. You know, like,
right.
What? They couldn't let this joke go even at the end? Wow.
No. Mm-hmm. It was the thing that sold. If it had been a t-shirt, that's what it would have said. And there's probably a t-shirt with that on it. Probably. I'm sure.
Probably. I was actually just searching to see if he ever hosted SNL, thinking that would be interesting.
Right.
He probably did, didn't he?
I can't find one. I find a lot of Hulk Hogan hosting, but nothing about.
Not the same guy.
No, turns out not the same guy at all. But Mr. T and Hulk Hogan.
That's not a knife, brother.
Wrong
guy, I know.
Wrong guy.
Mr. T and Hulk Hogan hosted together back in like the Billy Crystal days. In fact, here's just a taste of that. I know this is totally unrelated, but now that I've found it, may as well pay off here. Here we go. Oh, it's on the SNL 40 app and site. That's interesting. Okay, here you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. T and Hulk Hogan.
Oh, Lord. Yep, there they both are. Okay, let's hear some dialogue. I'm going to skip ahead. Hey, great player, SNL 40. Okay, right.
You know something, everybody out there, man, they've been seeing me and my main man T for the last 7 or 8 weeks training all over the country, man. California, Chicago style, brother, and in New York City.
All right, this is bullshit. I'm not watching that anymore. It's bullshit.
That little clip has already given me a headache.
Yeah, I don't like
that. What hurts me about going back and looking at Hulk Hogan in the 80s is realizing how much younger he was than I am now.
Oh yeah, dude.
It hurts.
Yeah. He was you know, it's impossible to look at him that way though. I see that video just now, knowing he's like 34 or something. 5 mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. But not even that. He's probably 32, 33, and he still, to me, will always be older than me no matter what. Like, that just doesn't I look at that and go, "Oh, that's old Hulk Hogan doing his thing." But,
isn't that weird, though, how that flips around? Like, if you go watch Tom Cruise from the 80s, you totally see him as a kid.
Sure.
He's a young guy.
Yeah.
He's mm-hmm. a baby face.
Yeah.
You know?
Young kid with a tooth right in the middle.
And Tom Cruise is older than you. Mm-hmm. You know? But, you like, it's just weird how some people have this younger persona in their 20s, and some people are just start out ancient and stay there.
You mean Hulk, like Paul Hogan?
Like Paul Hogan.
Yes. Yes, like Paul Hogan.
There's no young Paul. Even the 70s and 80s TV show. And I think you might have. Did you connect on Skype after we were looking at this? There was a 70s and 80s TV show in Australia that Paul Hogan ran that was kind of like the Benny Hill show as far as a combination of slapstick and TNA.
Yeah, I was going to play a little bit this cut. It's only in one ear for some reason.
But anyway, pull up a pew. There's nothing on the other channels. And sit down and have a look. I hope you enjoy it.
All right, that's him saying, here's some old shit I used to do.
Hey, tell me about life in the new army. The excitement of doing something different, the glamour of wearing a uniform. So I enlisted, and it's great.
Oh, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's really bad.
This is from Crocodile Dundee 2? It's not?
No, and the whole thing feels like it's being recorded on a trio, a palm trio.
Oh.
That's a great reference because you could have said a tape recorder, an old Walkman, but no, you picked a crappy half-step smartphone that we don't care about anymore. That's amazing.
You got to feel sorry for somebody who's trying to make something on a shoestring budget 30 years ago. Like,
yeah, I guess so. More than that, this thing's like 70s. This is real old, and it's not. The my problem with it is that it's not so much that Paul Hogan. You know what? Power to him. He figured out a way to come over here, or whoever, him and some producers figured out a way to bank on his innate Australianness, right? Mm-hmm. And then turned it into a thing that became basically his meal ticket for the rest of his life. He's still making Crocodile Dundee money at 75 or whatever he is now. 76, I guess. That's great. I don't begrudge him that at all, but I begrudge us, the viewing public. For allowing it to happen. It's just dumb. It's so dumb to me.
This movie was aimed at more it was aimed at my parents from this time period. I remember my mom loved this movie, and maybe that's the reason why it's comfort food, because I remember how happy my mom was to watch this movie, because basically this is a romance novel brought to the big screen as kind of over the top crazy.
I feel the same way about horse movies. You know, there's a long history of movies about specifically named horses.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Those are aimed at my mom. Like,
right.
I can sit and watch it, and because of the fact that my mom loves it so much, I feel good.
Yeah. You feel good.
Even though I can, if I'm by myself, I look at it and go, oh, this is so boring.
Do you guys have a favorite horse movie, if you had to pick one?
By the way,
Godfather.
I was going to say Aaron Brockovich, but Godfather's pretty good. I'll go with that.
Nothing I can say is going to be funny as either one of those. So, the thing that did speak to me was when they brought in Colin Quinn from this time period, because it was like, I was like, hey, it's Colin Quinn. They were speaking directly to me, MTV generation.
Remote control,
remote
baby.
Control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kari Wirth, that kind of stuff. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah. This is pre when he was on SNL as take Norm's place, I think, or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember now. Right. He was terrible on there. Freaking terrible.
I want to actually try to answer your question.
Oh.
Honestly.
Okay.
The Black Stallion, 1979.
That's a good movie. Sure.
No, no, no. It's a great freaking movie.
Well, I call it good. It's good. It's not
issues.
Great.
I have issues with horses.
What? Why? What? The big wieners or what's the problem?
Well, I just don't like horses. Horses are jackasses. Well, they're not actually jackasses, they're jerks.
You're such an uppity guy who doesn't like the horse. Well, actually, I'm trying to think of a horse movie I really liked, and it's hard for me to actually pick.
Secretariat or Seabiscuit.
I like Seabiscuit. I like Secretariot.
Toy Story.
Yep.
Sit down with your wife and one of your kids.
Okay.
Any one of them will do.
All right, just one?
Every horse movie is one of two types.
All right.
It's either he's supposed to win the race, mm-hmm. or he is some poor lonely girl's best friend. That's all horse movies right there.
Poor lonely girl's best friend.
That's it. There's your horse movies.
You're kind of right.
Next.
Yeah, okay, I got one for you. The ones my sisters adored growing up.
Actually, Brian Dunaway, you're wrong. Like, the two movies that came to mind for me when I was thinking what's my favorite were neither race nor best friend of a girl, at least. And I thought of War Horse and Hidalgo.
War Horse was great. That was just about to say that. In thinking about this, that's probably my favorite.
I never did see it. I should see that.
It's really good, yeah.
But that's still a love story. It's a horse love story.
That horse is still an asshole, though.
It's still some human love.
Please, Scott, get the 1979 Black Stallion. Sit down and watch it with a couple people in your family.
Okay.
Seriously.
All right.
You will love it.
So who's in love with the horse in that movie? Okay, it's got to be. It may not be a little girl, but there's going to be some kind of.
It's a little boy, isn't it?
It's a horse.
She's stuck on an island with the horse, or is that a different.
It's a little boy.
Yeah.
All right.
And the horse has some, you know, magic.
No one else can deal with the horse except for the magic child, right?
Right.
Am I close?
Yeah. The child knows how to tame this wild beast. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Please. I promise you, Scott, you will love this movie.
I've seen the movie. I just don't remember it. It's been forever, ages since I've seen it. But my sisters were all into that Man from Snowy River business, and it seemed like that was pretty horse heavy.
Yeah.
Even though it was about a man.
But it wasn't a good movie.
There's horses walking around. It's all kinds of horses in that movie.
Right. My favorite horses are Westerns. Or favorite horse movies.
A Man Called Horse. Did that have a horse in it?
I might have. Might have had a horse in there. Yeah, whatever. Horses. There should have been some horses in this. There weren't any in this. I got a thing to say, though, about the early bits of this thing. And by the way, I'm a little sad for the Hogans. They just got divorced last year. They got married in 1990. Like, what happened that many years
Paul
later?
Paul Hogan left his wife for Linda Kozlowski.
Yeah.
Right. Can you blame him?
Well,
they
got married.
Well, I don't know what his previous marriage was like. I don't know if she was a wonderful person or if maybe she may have been a fine human being.
Who cares?
Look at Linda.
She may have been a fine human being, but she looked like a sea urchin. She looked real bad. So I'm just saying Paul Hogan probably let his wiener do the talking. That's my thinking.
And circumstances could be debated, but a lot of times these older sort of Hollywood marriages, when they break up later in life, it's just money. They just they have a money problem and they go their separate ways.
Do you guys hear as if Randy is maybe in a helicopter giving us the traffic? No, not the dog. There's like
look to your left. If you look to your left, you'll actually hear.
We're getting some kind of breakup
Grand
there.
Canyon.
Some kind of shorty something happening. I don't know what it is.
Try talking again, Randy. Let's see if you got it.
Maybe hello. Maybe how am I coming in?
Still coming in.
It kind of sounds like a didgeridoo to me. That sounds like a.
I'm gonna disappear for a few seconds.
All right.
Keep going.
Krusty Bill.
I did have didgeridoo as like the first thing in my notes. Oh, what do you know? Didgeridoo is the first instrument that we hear in the whole movie.
Wow.
They really didn't waste any time getting to that trope.
And they did it early too, right when he's in the boat shooting or blowing fish out of the water with dynamite, which is also dumb.
Well, that's a great skit, like, yeah, to kind of continue the Randy analogy. It's definitely a skit, like, oh, Crocodile Dundee, you kook,
yeah, you crazy guy. And then I love that the Harbor Patrol in New York were so slack about security back in 1986 or whatever the hell this was made, 1990, whatever. Right. That they come out in the boat and go, it's just Crocodile Dundee blowing fish out of the harbor. It's fine.
It's hilarious. Look at him. He's hilarious. Hope nobody's scuba diving down there.
You cad.
This hijinks that he gets into because he doesn't know because he's from Australia.
Everybody pull back.
Yeah, pull back.
They probably do this all the time in Sydney Harbor, throwing dynamite into the thing to get fish.
Randy, you now sound like a full-on Cylon now.
That's
really bad.
He's about to say exterminate.
Yeah, exterminate. Exterminate. You want me to call you back? You want me to try you back? Or you want to do it there?
I got this. Keep going.
All right.
Yeah. So to me, it makes no sense that Crocodile Dundee wasn't in jail. I mean, because of the first of all, the bombing of the fish, can't do that. Secondly, he's on the playground talking to the kids, teaching them bad language. Right. Then he heads to the bar.
Teaching them to throw rocks too.
He's like,
hey, perfectly all right to throw rocks at a playground. So as long as you're aiming for a Coke can. And by the way, I want to apologize to everybody for this horrible Australian accent.
I think I like it. I think you have done the right thing and do not apologize.
I don't think you're imitating Australians. I think you're imitating this Paul Hogan. That's who I think you're imitating. Yeah.
Nobody's offended in Australia at all. Okay. In fact, as you've noticed, we've done this a few times on other shows and things, but when Australian fans pipe in about this subject, they all are mortified that this is the beacon of their country. They don't like
the
it at all.
Representation.
Yeah,
right,
they hate
the ambassador.
Yeah, they hate it because they think it's just... it's all crap.
Well, it'd be like us saying, hey, rest of the world, guess who we have representing America? Right. Jim Carrey.
Yeah, Jim Carrey. Or even better, the cable guy. What's his
Jim
name?
Carrey.
No, the other one. The comedian, the redneck.
Larry the Cable Guy.
Larry the Cable Guy.
That's more accurate.
Yeah, and if that was our... If that was our international entertainment ambassador, we would hate that.
I would actually love it because I would love to lull the other countries into this false sense of security that they're all idiots.
Like we're packlets or something. Right. And as soon as they cross our borders, we pounce on them superior intellect.
With all of our education and suits and everything, we would just freak them out. But that is kind of the equivalent, right? As if we had sent him around or made a movie overseas. I guess we've done that, but I don't think anybody looks at Larry the Cable Guy that way. It's just that Australia had stayed in, I don't know why there was so much relative obscurity then. Like, what was the deal? I knew history and things, but...
We knew we had our Olivia Newton-John. We had, what else? Like, prior to Crocodile Dundee, what was our, what Australian did we know connection. About Australia?
As a Ute, I knew nothing.
Like, this did we know about place. Aborigines and
I feel like I did.
I was blown away.
Men at work. We had our men at work.
You had your men at work. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had your NXS.
I did not know they were Australian.
Men at work?
Men at work?
Oh.
They have a whole song about being Australian.
I do now.
Oh, we knew. Hold on. I got one. We had our Mel Gibson and Mad Max. We had that.
Oh, right. Right.
I thought he was American as well.
What?
This is the 80s, man. What was I like? I was like, what? Like 12?
They have a whole, Men at Work has a whole song where they just talk about Australian things like, I'm a Friday combi.
I just thought they were really into Australia.
Hold on. How did you not know that Mad Max was set in Australia? It was filled, and Road Warrior were filled with Australian actors and not all speaking in Australian accents.
There were no kangaroos. How am I supposed to know?
They drove on the wrong side of the road. Did you just think that was avant-garde?
I thought they were in England.
Really? Are you telling me the truth? Is this all true?
I don't know. I don't know what I knew when I was 12. What am I?
Yeah. I mean, when you're a kid, it's different, right? I get that. That's true. If you're, I'd have been a teenager then, and I felt like when these movies came out, Randy touched something again.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I feel like even then as a teenager, I just felt like I was being fed a lie by these movies, and I couldn't really put a finger on why. So I probably have a bias here against it, and I apologize for that. There are people who are listening who are like, man, Scott really hates my childhood, but I don't know what it is. I just feel like it's bunk. Like when real Australians have told me in the flesh, I've never heard a single person say throw a shrimp on the Barbie in my life, and live there.
Well, plus they call them prawns anyway.
Yeah, they don't even call them shrimps.
No. I would not eat something called a prawn. No thanks.
Right.
Really?
Right, no.
Before District 9?
Even before District 9.
I had some prawns in China, and then they are the meanest people ever. I got these prawns in China. They were fantastic. The next day, we're driving over a dirty, brown, disgusting ditch. It looked like the sewage ditch for the city of Shenzhen. And my translator turns to me, and she goes, that's where you got prawns yesterday, was from a ditch like this. I said, shut up, you're lying to me. She goes, no, totally true. This is where they come. This is where they grow. I'm like, gross.
So that's the equivalent of coming down to South Carolina and me feeding you some kind of squirrel.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
I've had squirrel, though. I liked squirrel. I thought it was good. A little greasy, but pretty good.
Oh, God. They're so greasy. There's not much meat on a squirrel.
It's mostly grease on a bone. Yeah. Randy's back. Hi, Randy.
I'm trying.
He's trying. He's still popping and picking, but not as bad as before. It's a little bit better than it was.
I have turned off every electrical device in my home.
Have you tried unplugging the USB mic and then plugging
it in? Oh, I have.
Oh, you have?
Try to unplug the microwave.
It's just a receiver for all these other devices?
I'm getting really dirty electrical right now, and I cannot figure out where it is.
Oh, that's not good.
Dirty electrical.
I like it.
What do you call the machine that grinds up? It's like there's a mulcher operating right outside.
Right. So what you're saying is the lawnmower man is right outside your house right now.
Yeah.
Seeking revenge.
With his powers, though. Yeah, he has his powers.
Like, I know how to dirty my own electrics. I turn on the freaking dryer or the microwave. Those two things will just kick me off the internet. But I don't know.
It's weird.
Where do you live? Australia?
In an apartment in the OC. It's like living in the outback. Come on.
It is. It really is.
Theme gang trope. I like this one a lot.
Yeah.
This is maybe my favorite bit because I'd like that on this show when we get a movie where there's a theme gang. But what bugged me about this theme gang is they didn't get too themey, and I need it to be more themed. Instead, it was just a bunch of douchey white guys.
Right, exactly.
I love they had
like absolutely no gang in New York.
Yeah,
none. But it was once again speaking to our age group. If we had a gang that was super rich and was bored, we would totally go hang out because we would allow one guy at the pool table to hold the remote control for all the musical environment in the whole damn place. Because he decides he wants to talk, so he turns it down. I'm like,
he's
what is
the leader
this
of the gang. That's his role. Yeah.
Is this your basement? Yeah. No.
Yeah. When Hogan goes, oh, hey, y'all are the best gang in New York. And they go, yeah. Okay. Like that. It's like, come on, guys. Give me a theme gang I can get behind. Bang some bottles together. Tell me to come out and play, yay. How about that?
Right. Didn't happen.
I heard another buzz.
Did not happen. And they couldn't even figure out what they wanted to do. Yeah. I mean, they were the most useless gang ever. They threw stuff over the wall at the other with the Colombian gang, the Colombian drug lords.
Yep. Is that what they were? Colombian?
They were Colombian. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's where they came from anyway. That's where they troped it. Did you get the trope?
Trope me,
Scott.
You want to trope you? Here you go.
Trope. if you're a bad guy and you're gonna kill somebody gangland style, be sure to shoot the guy first and then look around to see who saw.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you will find them, and there they are.
Yep.
Oof. It's like they knew. It's like they already knew ahead of time that somebody had to be watching. If we shot somebody, somebody had to be see that, so we had to look around.
Well, and what's really goofy is it didn't even look like they were looking at Sue's husband, right? I mean, they were looking all around. It's like, okay. And then they freak out all of a sudden and start hopping in the truck. There's no real chase or anything like that. Yeah. It's like the guy hauls tail out of there and, of course, does probably one of the easiest things in the world, which is to drive a Jeep through some rugged mountain terrain and remove 35mm film from a camera at the same time.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Film changed it. I know, right?
Has for absolutely no reason, because he just goes back to the hotel with the separate camera and the separate film.
Plenty of time when he got back. But see, that was the modern equivalent of trying to upload the file.
Yeah, the slow little upload indicator. That's that kind of thing back then. Right. I guess. So when all this was happening about the gang time, fake Wild One cover comes on.
No, that was the real one. Yeah.
Was
that
it
was
real?
The real Iggy Pop version, yeah.
Then why did it real sound
wild
so?
Wild
it
one.
Sounded really fake to me. I don't know what then was going on. Because
it was
head.
Coming through them speakers.
I guess. I don't know. It didn't sound right to me. Something about that drove me crazy, and they played it forever. That's the other thing this movie did. It repeated and looped everything that was music related constantly. Mm-hmm. The stuff in the Outback was that.
Well, anytime you make a movie that is going to be in multiple locations, such as one's going to be in Australia, one's going to be in New York, you got to have a theme so that you realize, hey, even if I'm not looking visually, I can tell where I'm at. Where are you at? I'm in the Outback. How do I know? Because I can hear the didgeridoo.
Right.
Didn't help them standing around all the time, just doing nothing.
By the way, Wild One is a cover. Iggy Pop's version is not the original.
Iggy Pop is a cover of another
Johnny O'Keefe.
But was the one that was playing in the movie was that Iggy Pop.
Was the real Iggy Pop one.
But the one that, maybe I'm thinking of the one that isn't Iggy Pop as being the one that sounds right to me.
You've never heard any other version of the song besides Iggy Pop, I can almost guarantee you.
Who's the first guy?
Johnny O'Keefe.
Johnny O'Keefe.
Let's play it. We're going to play him. Oh, yeah. Never heard that one. Yeah. That's way too bebop.
I'm a real bastard, man. I like the wild flowers.
Sounds like an old 40s, like, hey, honey, I got you over here. Check it out. All right. Well, it's poo. I think we get to clips now because what else are we going to do? You got anything else to say? Anybody?
Well, we got to stand around. And also, anytime in this movie, you wanted somebody to shut up, you just held a knife to the throat because he did it like 100 times.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Big plastic
knife. You can't
talk
when somebody's got a knife through your throat.
Big fake fat plastic knife. Though, that thing
can't pee either.
Yeah. Nope. No peeing. Nope.
This goes right back up. I'm done.
Agent Toilet.
Agent Toilet.
Why would they call him that?
Well, that's not his name. That's just in parentheses.
Yeah, it's just D agent because they had multiple unnamed DAA agents. And so they put in parentheses after his toilet.
Nobody has last names in this movie. Look at all these names I want to give you guys from the credits. Aside from Sue Charlton, main lady, Michael J. Crocodile Dundee, the full name of Mick Dundee. All right. Walter Riley, who's nothing to do with Radar, who's played by John Millian. The rest of them are Charlie, Donk, Nugget, Frank.
Donk is my favorite. He is the Foster's Beard spokesperson for me.
Is he?
Oh, really?
He looks like it. Which one was Donk?
Donk was, hold on. Actually, while I figure out who Donk is, let's take a quick break, okay? You guys, I am so excited to bring you a sponsorship to today's episode in the form of Casper. I love Casper. I have one of their mattresses. I sleep on it every night, and I freaking love it. I'm not kidding either. It's maybe the first mattress I've had in my adult life that I felt like I could sleep on and get a good night's sleep on. Everything I've had up to this point has been kind of crappy. They're amazing. An online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of what you're used to paying for mattresses. And they're revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and all that stuff and passing the savings directly to you, the mattress consumer, the consumer of mattresses. Here's some nice benefits. There are two technologies at place here at work. Latex and memory foam. Both of those sound good to me. Better nights, better days, a better mattress. Try sleeping on one. Give it a shot. Here's my favorite thing ever. They know the importance, or they understand at least the importance of what it means to try one out before you really know if you want the thing or not. They offer free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day window. 100 days. Imagine that. So you don't have to go lie in some showroom on top of somewhere some other dude just laid. You get that thing at your house. You set it up. Very easy, I can tell you, because I did this too. Lay on that thing. And if within 100 days you don't like it, you can send it back. But you're probably going to do what I did, which is love it and not send it back. Part of the reason I loved it is the price. You can get them for $500 for a twin, $950 for a king-size mattress. You know, if you've looked for mattresses, that's dirt cheap compared to what the industry averages are. And they're saving this money because of the way they do it. They're an online retailer. It makes a huge difference. I want you guys to go right now and save an additional $50 with the offer code FILMSACK. But you've got to go to casper.com/FILMSACK to get it. So that's casper.com/filmsack. $50 off with the code FILMSACK. Big thanks to Casper for sponsoring the show today.
Donk was the big guy. He's the big guy.
Okay. I saw Donk's brother in the Brooklyn Zoo. He was in a cage. He was an animal. Because I'm saying that Donk is like the brother of an animal. If you don't get my joke, we're going to...
Would have been funnier if he would have done it that way. I would have taken that over what we got. Erskine, Denning, Ida, Teddy, Diamond, Meg, Dorigo brother, and Dorigo brother.
Well, that makes sense because we're either the only characters besides the primary characters are either policemen or gang members, and you only refer to those people by their last names so that you do not get an emotional attachment.
Yeah, that's a good explanation for this terrible, terrible casting film.
And so Donk was the only thing like in this movie that really stuck out to me as authentic.
You sound great, course, now, by the way. Keep talking. Amazing.
And of course, Donk is a former pro wrestler, right?
Is he? No, I didn't know that.
He's total stunt casting. He has no business being in this movie, but they're like, everybody in Australia loves this guy.
Is he? From Australia? He's an Australian wrestler?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Former pro wrestler in Australia. Much beloved. They put him in here as just a guy standing around in a bar, basically, and he gets to return later and punch somebody. And the guy has no skills whatsoever. If you watch his scenes, he's looking at the director when everyone else isn't, you know?
It's we act stir. Now. We act now.
Yeah. Steve Rackman, he was called the Crusher, a genuine icon of the Australian wrestling scene, craggy face, hulking physique, known mostly for the Crocodile Dundee movies. He was in all three, one, two, and Crocodile Dundee in L.A., which is... That movie is a trope.
2001, right? I wish that one had been on streaming. It was not.
13 years later? How did they make a sequel 13 years later? Paul Hogan must have been 80 for the third movie.
Well, let's see here. Oh, he does look pretty old in this.
I've never seen a person who was 20 years older than their love interest in the film, but somehow his body is 20 years older than he is.
Yeah.
The guy looks like he's 100. I don't get it.
It's really weird. Also, by the way, so one of my favorite things about the movie we haven't seen, which is 3 or the L.A. one, is that it's Paul Hogan, Linda Kozlowski, and Jerry Burns, who played in Justified. He was, what's his name in the trailer? Buffy, or Win Duffy.
Oh, Win Duffy.
And Jonathan Banks, who plays Mike Ehrmantraut and all the stuff. Yep. He's in it. So maybe we should watch.
If it was streaming, I would have definitely had said, hey, let's watch it. But it wasn't. It made me sad.
Here's the weird thing, yeah. Brian Dunaway. You love the pictures. Look at the poster photo for Crocodile Dundee 2, and then look at the poster photo for Crocodile Dundee 3. They actually made him look younger 13 years later.
They did. How did they do that? Well, is that airbrushing?
But actual screen grabs from the movie, don't worry. No, he's plenty old.
Photoshop.
By the way, I like that you said. I like that you said to Brian, "Hey, Brian Dunaway, I know you like the pictures. Take a look at this.
He loves the pictures.
You like the lookings, don't you? You a visual guy, ain't you?
I like it.
So, have any of us actually seen Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles?
Yes, of course.
No.
Yes.
Without giving anything away, Brian, okay. I'm going to guess that he goes to L.A. and it's all freaky and weird to him, and 90% of the movie
is
like.
Are you sure you didn't see this?
Sushi. I call that bite.
Yeah. You know,
Wait, oh my gosh. Seen this.
That joke joke has to be in there. It has to be in
there. Where I come from, we call that bite.
Yep. Some hippie girls,
wheels on your feet.
It's basically it's the Axel Foley thing. It's exactly the same thing.
What do you want to bet he goes into a gay bar? What do you want to bet?
Guarantee it. Yeah. Guarantee it. Okay, we're talking 2001, so we're in a bit of a different era, so it's not going to be way all over 80s or anything, at least as far as I know.
Still.
What if there's a clip? Still. So you've seen it. You know what's up.
Right.
Wait, there's a character named Mal Gibson in that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Wow.
Please, Netflix, please stream this.
Right.
Now I want to see this for sure.
And of course, Hollywood. You remember Jared Burns, what's his face, was in it. And I forgot he was in it until I looked into the database thing.
And you get a special appearance by Mike Tyson, a special appearance by George Hamilton, who probably, comes on to give some tan
that's not
tips.
I would say, that's not a tan. Look
this
at this
is
tan.
A tan. You're probably right.
Right.
Oh, holy shit. All right, I'm going to play the trailer. Okay, here's the trailer for 3. Okay. There you go. I won't play the whole thing, and it's kind of quiet, as usual.
Deep in the wilderness, there lives a man. A myth. A living legend. At least, most of the time.
Where's your bite?
Croc pulled it under.
How big was he?
Holy shite, he looks 90.
And he's only 62 in 2001. Only 62.
Oh, he, son. I think it's son, isn't it? You guys remember that picture of that dude who had half his face outside of his truck for 20 years and the difference between the left and right side of his face? It's remarkable.
Wow.
It makes me not want to go in the sun.
Makes you not want to drive around in a truck for 20 years with half your face hanging out. That's
I guess so.
Bad idea.
I guess so. But he looks like his whole face was out of his whatever truck Dundee was driving.
But his teeth are forever.
Sure.
Paul Hogan's teeth are so perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, I want
those
his
are
teeth.
His?
No, yeah. Of course not.
Yeah, they're implants.
Well, don't worry,
something.
Randy. You keep eating that candy without brushing your teeth, and you too can one day have the perfect smile.
Oh, look at that guy's smile. Yeah. Even back in the day when he was younger, when these were presumably his teeth, those are still pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll give him that.
He has good teeth.
We'll give you that one. Didn't he make an appearance in Kangaroo Jack? Like some cameo?
Oh, God. I forget about Kangaroo Jack. I haven't seen that in forever.
He's not listed. It's really surprising, actually, on IMDb. He's only got 10 acting credits, 10 movie acting credits. For as prolific as he was and had a TV show in Australia for 11 years,
yeah.
The fact that he's, just got 10 movies, or not even 10 movies, really 9 movies and something called Anzacs,
right.
Which is a TV show.
Did you guys all see Almost, is it Almost Heaven? What was it? Where he's like a small-time crook.
Almost an Angel.
Almost an Angel.
No, I don't think I did.
Oh, here it is. Almost an Angel. Terry
that was depressing.
Dean. 5.4 on IMDb. Small-time crook becomes convinced that he will become an angel after a traumatic accident, resolves to perform the work of one.
Also starring Linda Kozlowski.
Oh, God.
Imagine that.
Big shocker.
Okay, let's go around the table. Name the best actor you know of, your favorite, who was pigeonholed into one and only one character and was prolific. Can't just be somebody in one thing.
That is not Paul Hogan, because I think he qualifies.
Can like Robert De Niro count?
No, because he played all sorts of different characters.
He's pigeonholed. I mean, I'm thinking he always plays the mobster guy.
He's very specific.
Right. Paul Hogan is always
like
fish out of water, Australian.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. This shouldn't be as hard as it's feeling. Hold on.
I'm going with Paul Blart because it's all over IMDb.
That is a really good. That's a really good answer.
He's in other stuff. He's only got two of those, and the second one's not even out yet.
Melissa McCarthy kind of fits into that same.
Yeah, I'd give her points.
Kind of.
Give her points.
See, it's hard, but to say same character, like pretty much the same character.
Yeah.
There's a lot of who kind of do the same shtick, but if they're playing the same character, that's a real that's
okay,
the tricky.
Well, let's expand it to same shtick because I've got such a fun answer. I just want to who's
all right.
Your...
Well, the De Niro counts.
Right. Anybody watch the Fast and the Furious films and want to claim Michelle Rodriguez? She always
plays
the same
character. Sure.
I always like that character, but yes, she does.
Yeah.
You know who it is? It's if we're now in that category, it's Michael Cera is the king right now.
Yes, that was gonna be my answer.
Yeah. That's a great answer.
That was gonna be my answer. Michael Cera, he could never be Indiana Jones.
No, right.
He could never be in a space movie.
Yep. That's him. That's totally that
Think
guy.
About it. Imagine inserting Michael Cera into Interstellar. Think about that for a moment.
Oh my God. Okay, well, I'll just stay on the ship.
You guys are that robot shaped funny. Okay.
Okay, you're going to eat that? All right, I'll sit here.
I love it. I love
Michael
it.
Sarah is the Crocodile Dundee of
2015.
I'm cool with that stuff because I like the idea of people who are good at the one thing and you still really want to see them in the next thing. Like, it's not... I'm not turned off by the Michael Cera does the same thing in every movie thing. It doesn't bother me. But the Crocodile Dundee thing does for some reason. And I don't know why.
I'll give you my backup answer.
All right.
Since this kind of fell on
its face. Juan Fernandez.
What? No, man. Freaking Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. Has he ever played a badass? Has he ever played a pilot?
What was the movie where he was a musician? Okay. He was kind of a dick as opposed to being the winsome, stammering English guy. But he played it like a jerk.
I can't remember.
Music and Lyrics? Was that it?
Is that it? Yep, that's it. Hugh Grant, Drew Barrymore, 2007. That is totally the name.
No, because he still plays. No, that's the thing. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of something else where he's like a.
Hold on, I'm looking. Not about a boy. He was.
You think about,
he plays like the I know he was in Love Actually, but he kind of plays the role that Bill Nighy had in Love Actually.
Oh,
interesting.
I don't know what that is.
Okay.
He's doing a lot of things that no one talks about anymore. Is he kind of off the is he kind of off the thing and nobody cares now?
Yeah, he's off, kind of off the grid.
Because he played this single character over and over in Four Weddings and a Funeral and 9 Months and Notting Hill and Bridget Jones and About a Boy. He's always the same guy.
Yeah, I like
him. He was kind of a dick in About a Boy.
Was he?
He was kind of a dick. But he wasn't. I'm saying he wasn't a fireman.
Out of context, that's fantastic. Thank you, Brian.
You know what I'm saying? He didn't put on a mask and be in a Star Trek movie. He's just like, this guy is just stuck.
Yeah. Right. I'll give you him. He's good.
Yeah.
Not that I'm the ultimate judge here, but I feel like he qualifies. And there's plenty more. But listeners, send us some of yours because that's always fun to hear.
We'll compile the Paul Hogan memorial list of actors who only do one thing.
Yes. And when he dies, because he's still with us. Unlike Brian Dunaway's thinking that everyone associated with Crocodile Dundee was long dead.
He's dead.
All right.
He's dead. Look at him. Just look at him. He's got to be dead.
He was dead during this movie. What are you talking about?
That's right.
It's like Weekend at Bernie's.
I have some clips from this 2-hour-plus film, okay? Good Lord. And really, for the record, if I haven't made this clear, it is one of my least favorite film sack movies we've done. I hated it.
Wow. I hated
it. Whoops, I didn't mean to play that yet. I didn't like it at all. I wish I didn't find anything to like. I just was bored. Like, all my fears about us watching it came true for me. I just hated it.
No, but don't you think maybe that you kind of had that self-fulfilling prophecy because you were dreading this? I mean, you can't tell me that you sat down and said, okay, deep breath, this is going to be okay.
I was dreading. What was that one we saw recently? Oh, I was dreading with the same, I'm telling you, the same level and maybe more dread for Karate Kid 2, and I came away enjoying it. So I don't think that counts.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mentioned it last time. Before Scorcher, I guess. But I felt like that movie wasn't nearly as bad. It wasn't, I don't think it's a good movie, but I came away thinking, oh, Karate Kid 2, despite its issues, it was all right. It was okay. Hey.
We're all aware of the little effect of movie confirmation bias, where if you go into a movie everybody loves and you're having a bad day, you're the person who doesn't understand why everybody loves it so much.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that we constantly find ourselves questioning on FilmSack. Like, we tend to watch shitty movies, and it's, you know, you have to stop and say, now, is it really as bad as I thought it was? Like, there's apparently 100 degrees of crap.
I had to literally meditate for like a couple of minutes before a movie sometimes. I'm like, okay.
It's in a genre I don't like because it's basically a rom-com, whether people like it or not. It's just a rom-com with a few twists. And at the end, though, it's a stupid rom-com.
Name a great romantic comedy for Scott Johnson.
I guess I don't know if you count.
Johnson?
Do you guys count Fried Green Tomatoes as a rom-com?
Oh, my God. Sure. That is a beautiful movie.
I love that movie.
I don't know if I call it a rom-com, though. I think more of it just being a beautiful movie.
Okay.
A tragedy. It's more like a tragedy.
All right. How about...
I'm going to go with The Princess Bride, even though it's more of an action-adventure. What do you think?
500 Days of Summer.
I haven't seen it yet, but I hear that's great.
50 First Dates.
Oh, you know what? Okay. What's the one with Topher Grace and Dennis...
Broke Mountain?
Quaid. Dennis Quaid.
Right. Woody Allen one, or is that a different one?
I think it's
the
a
one
different
you're talking
one.
About where he plays his boss. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I loved that movie. Loved that movie.
Yeah.
And I don't even know the name of it. That's how much I loved it. Hold on, I'm going to find it. It was called. Where's that 70s show? It was right after that. Spider-Man, Simpsons, Personal Effects. Hold on. Take Me. Nope. Too Big to Fail. Was that it? Nope. No. Best TV movie. The Double Giant Mechanic. What is this called?
Now, what are we talking about?
Take Me Home Tonight. It's a romantic movie with Topher Grace that was right. It was right after.
And Anna Faris.
Yeah, I think that's everything.
Is that it? Where she's the daughter of.
That's not the movie. Brian knows the movie. It's not Take Me Home Tonight. It's something else.
It's earlier than way earlier than that.
In Good Company.
In Good Company. That was it. In Good Company.
2004. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Paul Weitz movie. He makes interesting movies. He's got Dennis Quaid, Topher Grace, Scarlett Johansson. Now,
Scarlett Johansson is Dennis Quaid's daughter.
Yep.
And
as it should be.
Yeah, so
she didn't see how this was a party. But the point is, this was really, really well written, and it didn't have an ending that you expected in a rom-com. It's totally a romantic comedy. And it had all these little twists like you have. But at the end, what happened is not what happens in these movies. And I totally admired the movie for taking this weird road it took. I thought it was great. Fantastic. So there's your answer.
Okay. That's great to hear.
Good cast. Holy cow. Clark Gregg, Philip Baker Hall, Selma Blair, Ty Burrell.
It's a good movie.
I forgot about this movie. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. I like it.
Brian Dunaway mentioned 50 First Dates. 10 years ago, I called 50 First Dates the best romantic comedy of the last 30 years. that mm-hmm. movie has not aged well, Scott Johnson. Right. If you've never seen it, please don't.
I've never seen it.
It hasn't aged well.
But do see 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah. That's great.
That's really good.
And that's another one where my daughter, anyway, who adores it, says that they didn't end it the typical way, which is what I like. I like the idea that you don't have the couple does not have to drive off into the sunset for me to win in these movies. So there you have it. In fact, I like it when they don't. All right, here you go. Here's the thing. Here's clips. Okay, here's some clips. Here's Paul sad Paul Hogan thinking about home.
Are you thinking about home?
Yeah.
Guess you miss it.
The bush. A bit. I was thinking I could be sitting in the bar at Walkabout Creek right now, gazing across at Wally and Nugget and Donk. Or I could be here looking at you.
That's his dialogue to that whole damn thing.
It's hard to understand when you isolate it. If you can't see him actually moving, it's hard to understand.
Yeah.
I miss home for people who haven't seen the first movie.
And we're going to play some in the background. Yeah, here we go.
That's nice catch-up stuff, though, right? They bring the audience back. It's that or some montage with the previous film's footage, I guess. Right. Here he is doing some job hunting.
Mick Dundee's the name. Fairly new in town. Looking for some kind of a job. Any suggestions? It's enough job hunting for one day.
All right, kind of laughed at that.
Yeah, definition of deadbeat there, man. I mean, he stays at home, watches soap operas at the bar by 10 a.m.
Yeah. Heads out with kids at the playground.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird. It's a little
such
weird.
A loafer.
Here's some bad music from that era. That's that Charles S. Dutton pimp music.
Geez. That was music? I thought that was just noise.
That was straight out of Axel Foley's playbook right there.
Exactly.
A little late.
Can we get somebody who sounds like Harold Faltermeyer to do something? This is a comical scene, everybody.
Perfect. This is good.
Stationery? You know, pens, erasers. Office supplies. And that's heavy shit.
So can you explain? Tell me, stationery, I thought was just the paper. It refers to all of it? The whole kit?
Because you got to have your entire stationery.
In the same way that that electrical outlets are hardware.
Right. Paper's pretty useless without the pen, unless you're right.
You get all
planes.
Of it at a stationery store, so kinda.
Okay.
So they attempted a multi-layered joke here, right? Where he meets a black guy and your expectation in 1988 is that the guy is doing something like he's running drugs or he's running numbers or something. And then it turns out it's like the least offensive thing he could possibly be doing. Yeah. So he's actually trying to keep it a secret because he's going to lose his street cred if everybody finds out what that he's making money.
Yeah.
Seriously.
That he's a legitimate businessman.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all. I liked him in Alien 3 though. And The Rock, not the one.
I liked him in this.
Forgot about Alien 3. Yeah. He was great.
You liked him in this.
Yeah. He just too small of a role. In fact, they should have taken him to Australia. There's your fish out of water.
I mean, let's not unestablish the fact that if there's a jive talking character in a movie, I like him.
I usually do.
But he didn't jive talk very
much.
Yes, he
did.
He had a horrible limp.
It was his pimp limp. It was his pimp limp, right?
And it's much easier
pimp
for him
was
to...
Very lazy. Lazy pimp lamp. Didn't like it.
Much easier for him to hang out in front of a building for 10 minutes waiting for Crocodile Dundee to show up than just go up the elevator and drop off that paper bag full of pens.
Yeah, there was
He's got a business plan, okay?
It's like the speed, the Jeep, let's get the film out of the camera moment. It's like, come on, there's way more convenient ways of doing all this stuff.
Right.
It was hard to get past
that.
You want
to get him up into that building, there's lots of ways to do it.
Yeah, and even if it is.
That's heavy shit.
All right, great.
Because all that was just set up for the whole jumper suicide thing, right? Because there was no other deliveries he ever had to make.
Right. The story at this point is that there's a journalist who saw a horrible hit go down and then somehow escapes with the film of it and sends it to and like that was actually interesting. I was actually thinking how cool I'd like to see a different movie with that subplot.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, there was one other scene that I kind of was impressed with, and it's when he was trying to escape from Senator Toilet over there, or Inspector Toilet and the other guy, and he went leaping off that building with that rope. That was just a cool stunt. Yeah, that looks good, you know, just like kind of jumping way out and then swinging into that. Oh, can I play this here? There's a nicely dressed professional couple having a nice dinner by themselves in the room, and he pops in and says, "Hello, sorry about that." I hate that stuff.
Right.
Hate that.
Who pays for all of that?
So
your
many movies.
Your homeowner's insurance does.
You either come through the ceiling, or you blast through a window, or you run through to chase a guy and apologize on your way through to the innocent people who are there. I hate that trope.
Sorry.
I call it the universal soldier trope because I think they did it better than anybody.
Now, Charles S. Dutton did something better than anyone in this movie. I had to capture it. This is him making a wheezing sound when he was about to laugh, and I isolated it, and now it's yours to have, dear listener. Here you go. There you go.
It's like that Terpster.
It does, like that Terpster clip. You're right. Yes. Anyway.
It also sounds like you're just letting air out of a balloon.
I know.
Right.
It's otherworldly. I like it. All right. What? I don't know.
What's he like in bed? I don't know. He still sleeps on the floor.
So, funny. Not only are we mired heavily in the don't even show sex, don't show anything about sex. We go so far as to, we won't even admit that a couple is having sex in this movie.
Can't do that. I mean, they're clearly, they're living together in every way you can think of.
Well, and they're in love.
Yeah, and they love each other. It's a great snakeskin man, pretty lady story.
Pretty lady can't stop showing her butt to everybody. It's beautiful.
Sure. All right. How about some angry acting then?
Did you send him off?
Yeah, but not to you. But don't worry, I'll send you some framed copies.
Where did you send them, Bob?
Oh, yeah, Brannigan, sure, yeah. I tell you, and you kiss me goodbye. Read my lips. They shot at me! They already killed one guy! Now come here and get me!
There you go.
Yeah.
Not a likable guy. No. Not a likable guy.
Was he in the first one? He was.
No, he was only mentioned in the first one.
Oh,
he
really?
Is her ex-husband.
I thought he was in it.
I thought he was, too.
Not according to the trivia. I thought the same thing. Mm. And I was like...
I have such a very small memory of the first one. I don't remember any. I remember the knife and the toilet.
Wait,
the bidet.
You remember the knife?
I remember the day the bidet was like a drinking fountain in the first one or something. That's all I remember.
We've been talking about angry acting going back to the early days of Extra Life Radio. Is it over? Do people do that anymore?
Oh my God! Yes.
Probably just better. Yeah.
Sean Penn made a whole career out of angry acting.
Yeah,
still
but. But that's I'm talking less than 10 years ago. Sean Penn now makes movies like Milk where he, you know, like
he was angry
really
in
serious.
That.
I think
but
they
he
make,
wasn't doing what we just heard.
Here's what I think they do.
Don't have to do it.
Right.
There is still plenty of it going on.
Right. There's still angry acting going on. I think when a good actor does it, they are so visceral with camera movement and the guy's spitting and it's on purpose and they want to get that take and he's sweaty and it's up close and there's three cuts. Like it's to the point now where you're not noticing it as much because it's kind of well done. You know what I mean?
Well, like, yeah, it's very well done. Like Tyrese, I hate to keep bringing up Fast and Furious movies, but Tyrese in the Fast and Furious movies has to do this thing where he freaks out at least twice in a movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But it's not angry acting like we always notice.
Sure.
He's like having an episode, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
And maybe it comes out more as time passes because the other things, the production around it starts to not hold up as well, maybe, or something. And then it's more obvious that this guy's just way overacting on the angry stuff.
I haven't seen it. Like even if so you can probably come up with an example from like the Hangover movies.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. I never see that and then think, oh, that's angry acting, like we do with these older movies.
When's the last time you heard these Hollywood sounds? There you go. How about
last
that?
Time I watched the A-Team.
How about Crocodile Dundee too?
Wow.
Pew, pew. Here's Steven Root doing his thing in the bathroom, Agent Toilet. Okay. Here you go.
Oh, Lord, man, no. Look. How should I know where she is? I've been following you. Brannigan told me to follow you, and that's it.
It's a big jump from that to the judge on Justified, man. Big change in that guy's career.
And
love
then
him
Bill Dotrieve.
I could watch him in
news
anything.
News radio and
anything.
True Blood.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my favorite episode of True Blood.
And so you're telling
about the time
me.
I quit watching.
Right.
I didn't like that show. Anyway. Do up your fly.
Look, can I do up my fly now?
No.
All right.
Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
So the moment when he says, "Ooh wee, that's some mighty fine picking and grinning," that was my favorite. thing he's ever said.
When did he say that?
Oh, brother,
that?
Where art
thou?
Oh,
right. That's a matter of fact. I'm picking a grin.
Everything in Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is perfect.
I love that movie. Yeah. I love that movie. Any of you boys a smithy? Oh, let's go get it.
I kind of want a Sacco Brother, Where Art Thou, just so we can
all watch it together.
So we can all watch it together, and then I'll enjoy talking about it.
Yeah, I love that movie. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'd do that one. I'd film sack that. That's one of those where I feel like we are justified in taking a great movie and doing it anyway.
It's the Breakfast Club style.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
Get to do those once in a while. All right. Here's him talking to his penis.
You okay, buddy?
All right. And that's it.
Jeez. I wish you had called Little Buddy, though. I was really hoping that was
going
to happen.
Hey, Little Buddy. rest in peace.
It's passed away this past
week. What's his name?
Roscoe P. Coltrane.
No, his real name. James Best. There you go. I know it's Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Even I know it's Roscoe P. Coltrane.
He's only seen one episode, the worst one ever. All right, here's the thing I knew they would do, and I didn't know where they'd slip it in, but here it is.
Now that's a knife.
Yeah, we'll let that guy say it.
You know who that was?
Oh, sorry, this is racist. I meant to play this, too. Racist.
You know who that was?
Clint
Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood, car. Ah, cigar. Clint Eastwood was totemo takai desu.
Yes, very tall.
Yeah, it's a Clint Eastwood.
The things we did to the Asian people.
We don't just offend Australian people.
Oh my
gosh. So speaking of the Asian tropes and the racism and so forth, we're finally past the triad and the Yakuza being a generic bad guy for action movies.
Yeah.
Right.
We're finally past that. It's over. It's gonna die a horrible death.
Unless they do a movie about Yakuza specifically, then I'm in. Because I want to see a good movie about the actual Yakuza and that stuff. Anyway.
And we've talked about how your generic bad guys go through phases. Like there was a time when they were Middle Eastern, then they were Asian, and then they went back to Middle Eastern and so on. Mm-hmm. But the Asian discussion right now is about, can you portray Asians on television a little more please, because we don't see them. And it's right now it's about judging the TV show Fresh Off the Boat. Anybody seen it?
I heard about that it's good.
Anyone?
That's what I've heard.
No.
Okay, I've been watching Fresh Off the Boat, and I'm a white guy, so I don't have the vote, you know, on this, but but I'm really looking forward to more like this. I hope they make more. I think you should watch it even if you're predisposed to dislike it. You know, because it's going to be the example of, it's that thing that kicks off a thing. There's going to be more like this, hopefully even better.
I hope so. I like that next layer down, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We get past the surface stuff and we get to somewhere else. I heard that's really good. I heard some interview on NPR and they seemed very.
Well, Randall Park, who played the dictator in The Interview. He played Kim Jong-un in. He's hysterical. Yeah. Randall Park is like the funniest thing around.
Yeah, he was on this interview and he was very funny. He was cracking me up. I didn't realize he played Un though in that interview.
Yes. Oh, and he's the best thing in the interview too.
All right. I still haven't seen that movie.
Well, it's free. Watch it.
It's free. It's okay. It's not bad.
It represents a portion of my $7 a month. I'm not sure I want to give it to it yet.
It was free
on Netflix.
Oh, is it?
That's what he's saying.
Well, it's not free on Netflix. If you have a subscription to Netflix, you can see
it.
That's my point. That's why I said it's part of the $7 I pay a month.
If you watch more than one movie this month on Netflix, you can split the cost between the two movies.
If I can get that
for $7.95.
All right. If I can get that thing down.
A bunch of other movies for free.
If I can get that down to 30 cents, I'll do it.
Here's the thing. You wouldn't have seen The Interview if not for some hackers freeing it up for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So Sony took a little profit and sold it to Netflix. You should watch it.
All right. I'll watch it. I probably should just to do it. We're not doing it for the show, though.
No. Yeah. You need to see Randall Park as Kim Jong-un. All right. It's a stir.
Well, here's another bad guy with his laugh. I like that guy.
That was the main bad guy?
Yeah, the one that was clearly not the scariest man ever. He was lame.
Red suit, you mean?
Yeah. He was
Captain
lame.
Red Suit.
Captain Red Suit.
Red Suit phone.
Wakey wakey.
Wakey wakey.
Yeah, ah! I like that part.
I did like that scream.
Also, I wish people would call this to each other more.
Oh, you're too heavy to be a clever dick.
Clever dick.
Is that what he said?
Big fan of the clever dick. Yeah, I like that one. Here's another one.
Hey, yo, like, be cool with the clutch, Jack.
Yeah, be cool with the clutch, Jack. That's terrible jive talk.
It really is.
That's what I said.
She do not know how to hold a smoke. That's what it is.
Wait a minute. That was a white guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a white guy.
But that's the point, is it sounded like a bad impression of a white guy.
And so was, and the same as the white guy who wrote that line.
Yep.
Yes.
His name was Paul Hogan. all right. No, what?
They don't even have machine guns, man.
Oh, that's the gang.
Man.
All right. I like the Karate Man moment. So here's that. I kind of like that.
Oh, yeah. Karate henchman.
I miss people doing the
they don't do that anymore.
When they do the karate, now they don't anymore.
No, because it's dumb and always was.
There's probably a really good Japanese word for that sound.
What do you think it is? Like,
I don't know. I'd like to know what the word is.
Wait, we have some Japanese speakers in the audience. Tell us, what is the Japanese word for the wah, that whole thing? Maybe it's Chinese origin.
It's really fun to go around and ask people what they call things, you know, like, like what David Sedaris has this famous thing where if you're ever in another country, ask them what sound does a rooster make, and you're going to hear a completely different sound everywhere you go.
It'd be like Arrested Development when they're all trying to do the chicken. It'd be like that.
Can you believe they're going to have another season of Arrested Development?
Yeah, I heard 17 more episodes. Really? Yeah. And the word is this time they're all going to be in the same room for once.
Yeah.
Like they're actually going to do it, you know?
That was the deal for me. If this last season, season 5, didn't work, it didn't work because they didn't try hard enough to make it work.
Yeah. Green screen Fonzie doesn't work for me. I need him in the room with those people.
Right. So if they're going to make another season and they promise to do what they used to do, I'm in.
Yeah, I'll be in for that. Because I still think there were great moments in this last thing. Like all that Ron Howard stuff was great. Like, there were really some funny things, but you need to all be in the show at once, okay? You don't need to be all spread out and do every episode, everyone gets a show. I hated that. Also, Ellen's wife, get that nose back, the old nose you used to have.
But, like, I think the gag was that you're not supposed to know if the character has had, like, facial surgery.
Well, they did that, but she got real one. I mean, that's her getting it done. If you go look at her just hanging out in public, she's got a total nose job that makes her look like a different human being. She's the Jennifer Grey of our day. She doesn't look the same, like the same person anymore. And I hated that because I just want her to look like she looks fine.
Wasn't Jennifer Grey in our day as well, though?
That's true. Our younger day. Our younger day.
By the way, Dirty Dancing is streaming?
No.
No.
I don't know. I'm just saying. By the way, Dirty Dancing
is streaming.
Nobody
puts Baby on film, Zach.
No.
I'm just saying to the people listening,
all right.
Dirty Dancing is streaming.
Yeah.
That movie is...
Come on, guys. Style. It's great. I mean, it's got abortions and it's got...
Yeah, it's great. What? It has abortions?
Dancing.
I don't remember the abortions. Who has abortion?
It's got
the
whole watermelon.
Is that the main crux of the story?
That baby gets to dance is because...
the other chick...
The botched abortion.
Oh, I don't remember this. You know what I do? I mix that movie up with Pink Flamingos a lot. Or no, wait.
I totally can see why.
No, not Pink Flamingos. The one... What's... What's the one where it's the guy that played Tex, Wild Things guy, bad guy.
Oh, Matt Dillon? You're talking about the Flamingo Kid?
The Flamingo Kid. Oh. I get that and Dirty Dancing crossed all the time.
Have we ever seen Matt Dillon on Film Sack?
No.
We tried to see
The Bodyguard when it was streaming briefly and then it went away, but I think that's as close as we've been.
Like, Wild Things, I don't think I really want to watch with you guys, but like...
Well,
that's Brian. That's Randy's private time.
We don't like you in that way either.
I'm just saying, Wild Things is problematic. But like, we should watch something like Little Darlings.
I don't know what that is.
You don't?
Yeah. No. The TV
what,
show.
Little Darlings? The
Tatum O'Neal,
Christy McNichol. Yeah.
Oh, that's old.
Yeah, that is old.
70-something, right? Tatum O'Neal, Christy McNichol. Is he in that? He's in that, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, he's the guy.
All right, we're going to do a quick run-through of his films. Let's see what might be worthy.
yeah. Oof, it's rough.
Herbie Fully Loaded in 05. No, don't want to do that. wow, he's in a lot of things. Tex, maybe. I could go far back. I could go Outsiders. Hey, The Outsiders. There you go.
Oh, The Outsiders would be great.
Yeah. but no Flamingo Kid, please. I hated that. Ooh. All right, we're back. Technical difficulty. Yes, Brian. Ooh, what? Ooh.
Oh, they got a link for robotic sound words cut off delay on Skype. Let's see what it says to do.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Well, good luck on that. Where the hell was I? How about this one? Did that one. How about this?
No one touches Dundee. He's for me.
He's don't kill him, he's for me.
Crocodile Dundee is for me.
They really just tried to work in every kind of gunplay action trope they could a quick amount of time.
Randy, you're kind of our local gun expert, right? Uh-huh. Hey, when someone tells you you can't shoot straight, isn't that the very definition of a gun? Shooting straight? Isn't that pretty much all it does?
Yeah. You can't aim well is what they're saying, but you're right. Yeah.
I can deal with that.
You can shoot straight, you just miss.
Yeah, you miss. Good thing you can't shoot straight.
Okay, so yes and no. Over short distances, yeah. But like, if you're shooting a rifle at somebody who's 50 yards away, you're always shooting in a curve, right?
Mm. Are you? So, downward curve because of the earth.
Yeah.
The earth.
So, earth. I don't know.
Earth. The earth.
I don't know. You don't ever hear shoot straight, though. You always hear, I can't see straight.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
That is weird.
How could you see anything other than straight?
Yeah, good point.
I guess if your eyes were crossed, you're not seeing straight.
Here's a short one.
There's a quick away.
I just like the way that guy sounded.
There's a quick away.
Quick away.
Great yell. Here's a good yell. Pretty good.
Wow.
This is when Crocodile Dundee was harassing the bad guys, because that was about as scary as it got.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Also, this sound. I think I get it. Gives you a brown note. You listen to it three times, you poop your pants.
Right.
What do they call that thing? There's a name for it, like a bulwark or bull.
Oh, right. Is that an actual thing? I figured he just made something MacGyver
style.
But he's not. I don't think that's how it works, because they showed him at a constant speed, and I think you have to slow down and speed up to get that varying degrees of noise, right? Because I don't think it just. It was some weird sound work here.
It was cool. Besides,
you thought it was cool?
I thought that part was cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, I'm trying to give this movie something.
It was basically all right, I'm giving the bad guys a warning.
Yeah.
I'm gonna freak them out.
It was an iconic scene.
Hopefully Slappy over there will blame it on a bird.
I just want to say one thing about the guns in this movie. Yeah. There were a lot of different guns in this movie. Most of them, Juan Fernandez's character, Miguel, had 7 different guns in this movie for whatever reason. And the one that you get to really stare at is a Smith & Wesson 66. It's a 357 Magnum, really, really powerful handgun, and he shoves it right up against his junk.
Yep.
There's a scene where he's like threatening what's her name?
Yep.
And she looks, and there it is, man. You got a shot of her face and this gun pointing right at his junk. And all I'm thinking is, she should just pull that trigger.
Yep. Right.
That would make a crazy scene if she pulled that trigger.
Right in the danglies, as I like to say it. I don't know what this is.
Nah.
Oh, did you guys say nah?
Wow. I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
Nah.
Here's a longer version.
Nah. Needs garlic.
Yeah, he's eating a bat.
Garlic.
Nah.
Is he eating?
Nah.
Yeah, that's one of the Aborigines who brought his own food.
Wasn't it a bat?
Oh, right.
Great big bat.
Oh, why were there bats in this movie?
I don't know. There are not a lot of bats in Australia, are there?
Sure there are. It's just stupid. Okay. Why are there bats in this movie? It didn't add anything. It wasn't funny.
Well, it wasn't funny, but it did drive home the point that everything that Crocodile Dundee was doing was pretty much useless, because he did all that work to get the bats there, and then the bad guy just kind of waves his gun around. They all disappear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mr. Hogan, should we take the scene out with the bat?
Nah.
Okay.
By the way, you want to hear something funny that occurred to me? I have all these shower thoughts whenever I'm watching a movie. Mm-hmm. Bats hang upside down. So that means if they have to poop, their butt's pointing the wrong direction.
Right.
Yeah, while they're sleeping.
Shit down themselves, yeah.
Yeah, that's weird. That they must hold good. It. Plus they have to hold it, right?
Yeah. I wonder if the bats have a saying for that.
Hey, Bill, you're shitting upside down again, buddy.
Yeah, you're up guanoing, Bill.
Up guano. I like that. Guano don't run uphill on a cold day there, Bill. Take your pants off.
Take your pants off.
All right, that's it.
That doesn't work on
take
me.
Take your pants off.
No, it doesn't work on me.
It's getting hot in here.
Take up all your pants. Oh, look at this.
Hey,
It's the checklist. Throw a full-size Asian camera in the bad guy's face to get away. Check. Got it. All right. Howling gang as mansion distraction. Check. And lots of sitting around. Checkity check check on that one. Looky here, Trek stuff. Steven Root, who played DEA agent Toilet, was on TNG. He played a Klingon Captain Kavada in the episode Unification 1 and 2. I did not know that was.
I didn't know
he
was Klingon.
He has been in everything.
Yeah, he's the guy. The guy is very prolific in his acting credits.
Yep, he's like a bit of butter on a huge piece of bread. Mm-hmm. Carlos Carrasco. Who played Garcia, was in DS9 three different times, played three different people, and in Voyager, played another forehead of the week, somebody named Bahrat in the episode Fair Trade. Yeah. Anthony Cirillo, who played Subway Hitman, Subway Man. In Voyager, he played Alari Aiden in the episode Warlords. A lot of Star Trek stuff in this here film. Soundtrack grade, I give it ML for mostly loops, and... That means it's over and over.
I had 5 minutes of loving the music, and then I hated it.
Yeah, right. It was okay the first couple loops, and then it got real bad. All right, it's time for the Twitter post. 140 characters or less, that's what you have to sum this thing up. Let's start with Randy.
Told you. Crocodile Dundee 2. Like a Mediterranean fellatio marathon, whoa, a couple of hours that just got completely lost in the bush.
Wow.
Gosh.
Intense. Wow. That was a good one.
Oh, God.
Good Lord.
I'm going to be sick.
Also, Brian Dunaway.
Crocodile Dundee, too. Like saying didgeridoo. I like saying didgeridoo. I may not get another chance. Didgeridoo.
There you go. Third time's a charm. Now some freak's going to jump out of the mirror and eat you.
Now that we've watched both Young Einstein and Crocodile Dundee right. 2, this will be the last appearance of Didgeridoo on FilmSec.
And, yeah. And there was another one.
I used to watch Kangaroo Jack. But
no.
Oh, there was another Australian franchise that we watched.
I don't know.
Are you serious? What?
I forget.
I forget.
I guess Thunderdome 2 might have a little bit of Didgeridoo.
That could be it. All right. So there's that. Let's see. Oh, look at this, everyone. Check it out. Well, we haven't done Brian yet. Brian Ibbett's final. Words. Brian Ibbett, go.
It's going to be anticlimactic because you kind of did it as an intro to one of us. But Crocodile Dundee 2, that's not a steaming pile of crap. This is a steaming pile of crap.
That's pretty close. It's all right. I don't mind. I don't mind a bit. Okay. Oh, look at this. Alternate titles just handed to me. Pre-9/11 harbor security was a lot more relaxed when dealing with dynamite fishers. Or... Mm-hmm. Let's not do anything. That's a pretty good title. We got phone calls this week. Thanks for sending them in. They come to us at 801-471-0462. And today's calls, we have two of them, starts with this.
Hey, Scott, Randy, and Bri-Bri. This is Tall Geese from the Tadpole calling in a movie request that you have to do sometime. The movie is Robot Jocks. And yes, it's as awesome as it sounds. Released in 1989, it would be, and I don't want to sound too hyperbolic here, the greatest movie you will ever sack, past, present, and future.
Good Lord, man.
Wow.
That's some high praise of Robot Jocks
right there.
Yeah.
I'll put it on our all-time watch list. It's not streaming.
1990s cult film, indie film. Huge robots manned by jockeys. Short guys?
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, little short guys.
Right. Fight super powerful duels in the post-World War III future starring... People.
I'm in.
Jeffrey Combs.
Oh!
Mm-hmm.
Hey, he's an Andorian. He's the one you love.
He's everything.
Here's another call about watching it twice.
Hey, FilmSec crew. My name's Eric Schlichting. So I was listening to the last episode about Scorcher, and I heard that Randy watches every movie more than once. And I was recently listening to another episode, Troll 2, where Randy seemed to absolutely hate that movie, so I wanted to know, did you actually watch that one twice? Thanks. Bye.
Now, this is a habit that has come about since then. It's maybe
nothing
last...
could be as bad as watching one run through of Trolls 2, so
yeah,
all easy.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I had a string of film sacks where I felt underprepared.
Yeah.
Like episode after episode, and I just started watching the films more.
All right. Well, see, I admire it, and I also. I feel like we should say really many more nice things after at your eulogy one day a year when that happens. Because like,
and Randy would always watch the films twice.
Yeah.
Oh, the poor bastard.
The sacrifice he would make.
It's not a sacrifice though. Like that's the wonderful thing about Netflix. Mm-hmm. You can watch a film 1.5 times if you want to.
That's true. I've yet to do that. I think. I'm trying to think if I've seen anything twice on Netflix. I don't think I have. Maybe I watched something and said, "Ooh, Kim would like this," and then watched it again with her. But
right.
Usually, the second time I watch something, I watch the first 2 minutes and then skip forward a bit.
Yeah.
Because you know.
Because why not?
I will sometimes follow up my single viewing with YouTube's best hits. True story.
What's that?
It is.
So, like, you just go to the YouTube and you just type
search
in
the movie name,
and you just get like the best
clips.
Scenes.
Oh, yeah, I see. That's a lot like doing second screen kind of IMDb check-in and stuff.
Right.
Now, I like that. That is one of my favorite things in this era that we live in now, is just being able to kind of branch out and get really into whatever it is I just saw. So, like, watching Daredevil, which I'm totally into, and I think it's really well made.
The Netflix original series.
Yeah, I'm so happy. Yeah, let's be clear about that. Not the movie that was made by Fox Pictures.
With Ben Affleck and this guy from Ireland. What's his name?
That guy.
The guy from Ireland?
From In Bruges, who was amazing in that.
Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell, there he is. what was my point? I forgot. I love that we can just do all this other stuff. Like, look it up on Wikipedia. Where's that actor now? What else was he in? Like, I love that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I embrace our weird future of interactive film watching. we have, that's all the things we have to play for you. And that's all the emails we have too, because we didn't do any emails. We just did calls. So we just have to talk now about what our next movie is. And I don't have any idea what it is.
King Kong.
Oh yeah. 1976, right?
1976 King Kong.
King Kong.
King Kong.
King Kong.
Yeah. So we're going to drink Patron.
Remind me.
Sorry.
Remind me who this is. The one with what's her name from
Jessica Lange.
There you go.
Yeah, it's the big
Bridges.
Giant ape.
Yeah, right. And Jeff Bridges. That's right.
Yes, and
he's a
René Auberjonois.
René Auberjonois.
That's kind of a hint as to maybe a possible Star Trek connection, but I don't know. We don't know.
You never
Benson.
Know. You never know.
Exactly.
Do not watch King of Kong, which is also streaming.
No. Do watch it.
That will make you hate people.
Yeah,
it
will.
It is a film. The King of Kong is a documentary about white boys in America.
I love that.
You hate Billy Mitchell. That's about all.
Yeah. No. Everyone except the other guy, the weeby guy.
Yeah.
Everyone except him in this movie is a bad guy, and it's a freaking documentary.
Yeah. No.
Hey, this movie also, by the way, King Kong, has Jack O'Halloran, who played Nan in Superman 2. I cannot wait to see him in another role.
Jack O'Halloran,
right.
Dude.
I got a confession about this movie. The 1976 King Kong movie was probably my most watched film as a kid during the early 80s, because I had the ability to record and recorded videotapes and watch back.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
that's what I did with Major League.
I did it with Star Wars. I beat the hell out of those.
Can we insta micro sack King of Kong real quick? Because I'd really like to ask Scott Johnson a couple of questions.
Go for it.
What does Scott Johnson, with your history, what do you think of that scene, that sort of culture of people from back in the day trying to set high scores? Are they just full of it? Was there anything?
Oh, no, that was a big deal. Well, so when so you're talking about like when my dad owned arcades and all that stuff.
Yeah, the 80s.
Yeah, he would have these competitions at the arcades that we ran. He had two or three of them. I can't remember where the third one was, but we had two malls that had full-blown arcades in them. My dad ran all that. And they were all his own machines and everything else. And it was great. And he would run these competitions for prizes like digital watches, for example. There was this Timex digital watch that was like, had the whole keyboard on it. You guys remember those? Like the whole
calculator thing? Yeah, like the little keys.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I won that in the competition. I shouldn't have even qualified because we had a battle zone at the house that I cheated on all the time and played. But I won playing Battle Zone. It may have been Crazy Climber, but I got the highest score in one of those two games and won that watch that year. But the competitions were really fierce, and some of the same faces would show up, and there would occasionally be money on the line. So I think that King of Kong stuff is like a genuine thing. I mean, it's like, you know, look at Dota 2 tournaments and League of Legends tournaments now and Hearthstone tournaments. Like that fervor, that's the equivalent of then. I just think it was a smaller scale and it was more spread out and less unified, but it's really not any different.
And do you recall it being as uniformly white and male as King of Kong?
Very, very white. Oh, yeah. It is a white man sport. Like it is now. It's an Asian man sport now, but whatever.
For sure.
It was not diverse. It's not like, hey, Paco and LaQuisha, get over here and let's get our team going of black, brown, and white. That didn't happen.
I wonder why that is. Why, you know, like these games were developed by older Japanese dudes who, you know, poured their whole lives into making, they made, you know, like Donkey Kong was remarkable in 1980 or whatever, 93. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I just don't get it. I don't understand how a guy like Billy Mitchell exists.
Right. It's weird. He claims he was misrepresented in that film, like horribly.
Which is hysterical because the movie's practically about him. Yeah. All he had to do was be himself.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he just was made to be the villain. Everybody wanted him to be the villain. And he's an easy guy to make a villain. He's got the dumb tie and the stupid hair and it's just a big dork.
Tie. Oh, my God.
So bad. Him and his hot sauce freaking fortune.
Would, if your name was Billy Mitchell, why would you call your hot sauce Ricky's?
I love it. All right. Well, that's it, everyone. We've had a blast. We'll see you for King Kong next week. 76 King Kong, baby. Can't wait. That's going to be a good one. Filmsack.com is our website. You can go there and be there and have things there. You can also participate in the conversation there, which we always like. So leave your comments there on the blog. Our voicemail phone number is 801-471-0462. Our email address is filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, find us at Filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes, wherever podcasts are distributed. That'll do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Insta micro sack kind of sounds like a scrotal problem.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com. Blah, 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 blah.